I just have a feeling like this is, we're in the midst of kind of a revaluation of Tesla stock.
To watch a neural net come to life and be like, oh my God, what the hell just happened, right?
The stock's still going to be like probably 10 times bigger than it is now, 5 to 10 times bigger than it is now within 5 years, in my opinion.
Tesla is the only one that has a very obvious ramp to massive profitability as an AI product. Mm-hmm. And it's enabled by 8 years plus of development that is finally coming to fruition.
Imagine 2 years from now, how much more advanced it'll even be, right? And then all the data feeds to the humanoids.
No one else can do millions of cars per year that can drive themselves. And no one else has a manufacturing supply chain and capability and vertical integration to take that technology and then adapt it to a human or robot whose TAM, whose total addressable market, is potentially 10, 20 times bigger than the car. We're both longtime Tesla investors. We've been in the story for a really long time. When was your first, when did you first start investing in Tesla? What year was it?
I think 2010. Yeah.
2010. Yeah. So you're early, you're like early IPO days. You're very, very early.
It was like within a year or two of the IPO. I think the IPO was 2008 or 2009, right? So.
I think so. Yeah. My first buy into Tesla was December 2012. And for those that follow the us, just know that this is not investment or financial advice. It's just a conversation between two people talking about Tesla and the stock. It's going to be a lot of stock talk in this conversation. But I think the reason why I brought you on is you've seen the arc multiple times. You understand the company at a very fundamental level. Yours and Dave Lee's conversations back when I used to work at Tesla and before I started this weird YouTube thing, your conversations were incredible in helping to understand what the hell is going on. And
I heard that from a lot of employees, actually, believe it or not. At the time, I remember going to some of the events like in 2020 or 21 after my first conversations with Dave. It was like the Plaid event, and a couple of employees were like, oh, well, thank you for you and Dave talking to other people, because it really gives us an employee's perspective of the bigger picture. A lot of my employees don't even participate in the stock options, so they don't really understand it. But I think a lot of us do follow you guys, and it gave us good perspective, you know?
Yeah. The company should just give you and Dave Lee and everybody, Rob Mauer, Stephen Mark Ryan, everybody, just give them a plaque or something. Like, give them like a medal, something, so they can hang in their walls. You know, it really was, because it's, I think that outside perspective is super important, because when you're in the company, it's, you are so focused on your day to day, and you're working like a madman 24/7 or a mad woman 24/7, and you're going as hard as can be. And then, especially during like the FUD years, which this is another thing I want to talk to you about, because I feel like those might not exist anymore, but we'll talk about that very deeply. It's when you're being thrown BS day in and day out at an hourly, on an hourly basis, and you're working at this company, it's very hard to see what is actually happening outside of your doors. And what's even happening inside of your doors, because you're like, well, should I not believe what I'm seeing with my own two eyes? Everybody's against me. Like, am I an idiot? Like, why am I here? Yeah. Right. So those conversations are extremely helpful. I would love to hear your take on. So ever since Trump got elected, the stock has been on a tear. I think it's up from November 5th. I think, let's see what the price was November 5th. This is something I should have memorized, but I don't. It was 251 and now it's at 475 of right now. So it's a near double. It's a near double since Trump got elected. So what the hell is happening? So again, not financial investment advice, but just to get an understanding of what you think might be happening here. I'll give the mic over to you and we'll turn into a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, if you've been following Tesla for a long time, you've seen the perspective on Tesla shift multiple times. You know, in 2009, 2010, it was like seen, I think, as like this, you know, science experiment, electric car project that's probably going to fail, you know, at a $1 or $2 billion market cap valuation, you know? And so that's when I first discovered it and saw the prototype Model S and so forth. And then when the Motor Trend Car of the Year award was given to the Model S, it like started the shift of perspective, you know, like, hey, this isn't just a science project that's probably going to fail. This is actually like a legitimate electric car they built from the ground up. That's actually a good product. And then when Elon, like later, several months later, the stock didn't really react yet, or even though I think the perspective was starting to shift. So it was like a delayed reaction sometimes. But then months later, when Elon had mentioned that they're like cash flow positive or profitable, finally at Q1 of that 2013, I think it was, then the stock really took off. It just needed like something extra to really set it off, you know? And so that's when the stock price reflected that major perspective shift, I think, in the company at the time. And it went from like a $2 billion market cap to like a $20 billion market cap company, you know, relatively quickly over the next 6 to 9 months. And then we saw something similar in 2019 or 20, when the Model 3 ramp started being profitable and so forth. And, you know, there was a perspective shift like, hey, they're not going to go bankrupt. They're producing this mass market electric EV that's like a good product profitably. And it took, you know, a while, you know, for that, for we all saw it, you know, we all knew it was going to happen. I mean, it was hard for them to get to that place. But we knew, like, if you were following Tesla for a long time, a lot of people said they're on the verge of bankruptcy. But if you've been following Tesla, you know they're not really on the verge. Elon could tap the public markets anytime for extra capital. He had been doing that repeatedly. It was just how many times did he need to tap it to finally get over the hump to make it profitable, you know? So it happened when it happened, and then the stock took off, you know? So if you follow the company closely, like we have and a lot of people do now, you can see, you know, you don't have to trust the media narratives on this stuff. You know the truth. You know what's likely to be most truthful about the future of Tesla. And now the story is like the humanoid, the full self-driving robotaxis, that's like closer to this perspective shift going on right now. It's like, full, you know, version 13 came out. Everyone's loving it. It's like, wow, this is legitimately like robotaxi ready. And then the humanoid robot's like the next thing around the corner, you know? So if you follow all this development closely and the industry and all the potential competitors, and you kind of know that Tesla is most likely to be the winner of these things, you know, you just buy and hold, you hold on long term, and you do quite well over long term.
Yeah. I wonder, do you think the current environment, do you think it's more the Trump win and him being a roadblock remover and an anti-Biden sort of thing, where I think objectively speaking, the Biden administration was negative towards Elon. Even with the IRA, the public perception, you could very easily see, you know, when the president of the United States says we have ways to look into Elon Musk, that's a weird thing to say, right?
Yeah.
And plus all the other things that, you know, that's starting to come out, that may have happened or may have not happened. So that's been very weird. And then now it's like 180, and we talked about this, Hans and I talked about this yesterday. It seems like it went from a headwind to a tailwind. It wasn't even neutral. Headwind to tailwind. You're going to have essentially an ally that's going to help you, put in place, or at the very least remove things, to help you just hit the goals that you want to help. And ideally in a fair society, that's what we actually have. We have the right actions being taken in place here. I don't want a government that's going to give Elon preferential treatment. But I think what's very interesting is that the Biden administration seems to have been such a negative for Elon's ability to get the approvals he wanted from a regulation perspective specifically, that now the Trump admin might actually start taking actions that helps his companies really, really do extremely well because of how well positioned they are. And not having some arbitrary thing in front of them, right? So how much do you think is that versus people waking up to full self-driving and by default, the bot, because they're underpinned by the same technology? Where's your head at?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the politics has done a major shift from extremely unfavorable to Elon and Tesla to extremely favorable to Elon and Tesla. And yeah, the full self-driving, you know, unsupervised full self-driving robotaxi, you know, I think the roadblocks and obstacles now you feel like are going to get removed quicker and quickly versus before. I think we all kind of felt like if Biden's in charge, then like Elon's just in Tesla just has a really uphill battle to like convince everyone that this is like, they're going to have to start in like one small city first for a while. There's going to be, you know, pitfalls, and it was going to be a long uphill battle. They would get there, it would just take a while. And now you feel like, okay, 2025 might be the year where they start like massively putting this out in lots of cities, you know, later in the year as 2025 goes on. And you just have more confidence, you know, you have the politics on Elon's side now. You know, Elon and Trump are like best buds. And that's like nothing but great news for the Musconomy, you know, which is all good because the Musconomy, you know, all of his companies are doing great things for humanity. So you'd think politics would, you know, in general, would want to favor his companies to be on the right side of history. But the Biden administration, you know, they didn't. They were totally, you know, creating obstacles and investigations and things unnecessary. The SEC, Neuralink and all this stuff, you know, it's like, it's just the Chinese CCP was friendlier to Elon and his companies than the U.S. government for like years. And it's like, this is so backwards, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think that is a bigger variable of what's driving the stock movement versus the market waking up to FSD and the bot? Like how are you reading that?
Yeah. I think they're both, I mean, the thing is, it's hard to define like one single category or one single label or, you know, one single catalyst to what's causing the stock run up. You know, if you could have lots of parallel universes running these experiments side by side, you could define it and say, oh, this contributed this much or this contributed that much, but we don't have that benefit. But if I had to like theorize or speculate, you know, hypothesize or whatever, I would say the Trump win and the positive, I feel like the positive karma going forward with this is probably a very substantial piece. I mean, the stock took off, the whole market started taking off though. Let's be frank, like the rising tide lifts all boats and a lot of growth stocks started taking off too, because the investors are more confident in the economy and like growth stocks in general. They just felt like, hey, this is going to be a more efficient economy. All these companies have a better chance to survive and thrive. And Tesla's at the forefront of that. And so I think in general, there's not just the Trump Elon factor, but just the Trump overall factor on the economy, you know? So I think that's been a huge factor in Tesla's run up. And then any positive like inkling of news on top of that just gyrates the stock another 10 or 20% higher, like the full self-driving version 13, or, you know, maybe this Megapack factory coming online in Shanghai is going to be like a big deal and like, you know, tip the stock up another 10% when it starts producing significantly. I just have a feeling like this is like, we're in the midst of kind of a revaluation of Tesla stock. It's been, you know, as you've seen, like there's like these 3 or 5 year periods of like stock just like consolidating, you know, going, you know, hovering. And it was at like a $300 to $700 billion valuation for like 5 years or 4 years there from 2021 till now, you know? And so it's time for it to, you know, they've made a lot of work. They made a lot of progress. I mean, there's great plans for their future that are much closer now. And so I think it's time for the stock to kind of revalued higher. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. I think what's interesting about the current, like the repricing of the stock and the reevaluation of the stock, I think for those that have been following the story closely, the AI developments have been going on for the last, I don't know, 3-4 years. That's actually like public facing in a way. Like you don't have to be like locked up in a secret room somewhere to watch a neural net come to life and be like, oh my God, what the hell just happened? Right. The public started getting an idea of what's been happening. And it kind of started with ChatGPT. We had that aha moment really, truly, when people are like, holy shit, this is actually like a real thing. The Turing test, we just blew past it. And now we're just talking to our friends on our phones as if they're, you know, they're humans, but it's just a LLM. I agree with that. I think what's very interesting about the current state with AI and Tesla is that it seems like they're really the only company out there right now, in my opinion, that has this sort of very interesting marriage of leveraging that technology, artificial intelligence, which is going to allow them to do things in a very novel way at a fraction of the cost. So, and specifically for their use case is driving a car. So if you compare that model versus everyone else, they're going to be able to go parking lot to parking lot, doorstep to doorstep with a hardware suite in a car that costs no more than $2,000 between the cameras and the inference computer. Now, of course, they have all that CapEx and expenses they've built in their headquarters for the AI brain, but you can crank out millions of these per year versus Waymo being able to do 1,000 or 2,000 per year, or someone else having LiDAR, right? So that novel approach of artificial intelligence is going to enable Tesla to capitalize on that technology. And that's the only, like, if I look at other companies that exist out there, there's all these human or robot startups. There's all these self-driving companies, right? Yeah. There is, you know, you have your LLMs, your ChatGPTs, you have your you know, Perplexities. Just go down the list of all the different AI companies that exist. The Rabbit AI. To me, Tesla is the only one that has a very obvious ramp to massive profitability as an AI product. Mm-hmm. And it's enabled by 8 years plus of development that is finally coming to fruition once they move the entire model to be fully end-to-end. And V13, in my opinion, is the thing that's really, I think is the thing that could finally awaken the broader market or give confidence to Wall Street that says, hey, like you see it now, right? There, how many analysts or, you know, Wall Street folks have a Tesla? I'm going to guess a percentage of them have it, right? And then V13 at some point is going to land in one of their cars, and then they're going to be like, what the hell just happened? Mm-hmm. Right? What the hell just happened? I think that's a very interesting angle to think through, because it's not just going to be like a public catalyst where people are going to wake up and be like, why am I buying a car that doesn't drive itself? I'm going to buy a Tesla that drives itself. It might also be a catalyst for the broader market that says, holy crap, okay, so there is a legitimate profit case for artificial intelligence that maybe we underrated because of how difficult and novel the problem is, but it's literally on our laps now. And so let's sit down and do the math and see what this looks like 5, 10, 20 years down the road. And I think once they do that exercise, they'll start aligning with retail Tesla investors more, which is like, hey, no one else can do millions of cars per year that can drive themselves. And no one else has a manufacturing supply chain and capability and vertical integration to take that technology and then adapt it to a human or robot whose TAM, whose total addressable market, is potentially 10, 20 times bigger than the car. And no one else has this, right? No one else has this. That's the thesis, right? That's the thesis for a retail Tesla investor. What do you think about? I mean, do you think it's time? Do you think it's time for these guys to wake up to it? Like, do they still need to see proof? Do we need to see years of, you know, profits starting to come into the P&L? Like, how?
Yeah.
I'm curious to hear your thought process on all this.
No, I agree with you. I think that what's interesting is what's going on with Waymo in San Francisco. Do you think some of the Waymo success is giving extra confidence to institutional investors, institutional Wall Street, that's like getting confidence now that, hey, this can be done with Tesla too?
It should. I mean, I think what Waymo has done is amazing. Like, Waymo should be given all the credit in the world for paving the way for self-driving technology in the United States.
Because there was a pilot project. Yeah.
And they've executed at a very high level. Like, they haven't really gotten into any trouble with regulators, and the regulations have been very strict. I mean, you compare them to Cruise. Cruise was unfortunately a shit show. And then because of how GM managed that relationship or whatever, it just kind of like it collapsed onto itself. And it was very obvious that that was going to happen. I think Waymo deserves a ton of credit. The problem with Waymo is that it's not a scalable solution.
No.
You know? And I wonder if that's the thing that's going to maybe have investors be like, wow, so that's working, but they're limited to a handful of jurisdictions per year in the best case scenario, whereas Tesla can flip a switch nationally and these suckers can drive anywhere. And because of how the system drives and how it learns, they can just plug and play this sucker in Europe. And then this thing could drive itself in Europe in a matter of weeks or days or whatever, because, you know, it's just like a human learning how to drive. It doesn't really have to learn signs. It just can use context clues to drive, you know?
Yeah, no, yeah. The Waymo thing is like a successful pilot project for Tesla, just like business case in it being a brand new industry being created and it's working okay, you know? And so we've seen that here in San Francisco. Now, you model on to it, Tesla's much lower costs and plug and play availability across the board everywhere. And it's just like, it's like mind boggling. So like Elon Musk was talking, you know, 2 or 3 years ago on quarterly earnings calls, like this is going to be, it's just nutty, the numbers when you run it. So, you know, he sees around corners and everyone, like most Wall Street was like skeptical of everything he says, but it's turning out to come true. And now we're seeing the fruits of it reflected in the stock price. It hasn't quite come true yet, but it's so close, I think, that now other people can see it, not just Elon. You know, the people that are the decision makers with the institutional money see it. And they're starting to like say, hey, I need a piece of this Tesla. It's a different company. It's not a car company, you know? And so, and then you add on to that this humanoid thing, which is around the corner. And that's just the same kind of model of marrying the hardware and the software together that Tesla does, and just mass manufacturing it to the moon, like way more than any other startup company that's going to, you know, that's building like a couple prototypes and marketing themselves as, you know, as much as they can on social media, because they're just, that's all they can do. They can just market themselves to raise capital, because they're never going to like beat Tesla in manufacturing, you know? So this is just like nothing but great news for Tesla investors. And, you know, I have friends, family, like, oh, should I sell? Should I sell? And I'm like, no, this is just the beginning. Like, the stock's still going to be like probably 10 times bigger than it is now, 5 to 10 times bigger than it is now within 5 years, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you think V13 is going to drive meaningful adoption in the next year, like this V13, and, you know, hopefully unsupervised FSD sometime next year as well? How do you view that?
Yeah, I think more people are starting to try it. Like, I just hearsay, anecdotally, talking to people, people are more curious to try it. They get in the car, they do it, and I think there's incrementally more lay people, so to speak, testing it out and trying it. And, you know, incrementally more of them are going to be impressed. I don't know what that rate of adoption is, though. Is it very slow rate of it? It's just brand new technology. It's kind of scary the first time you use it. If you're not a tech person, it's like, ooh, even if it's doing it perfectly, you might turn it off, because it just freaks you out, you know? So I think what's going to have to happen is they're going to have to do it in some cities, like, you know, Austin or Miami or somewhere in California, like, and, do kind of the Waymo model in a couple cities first. And I think that's going to be the first like major driver of adoption when Tesla just officially launches in some cities or in some states first. And then also what I'm going to look for is, are there early fleet operators buying up Teslas, you know, like, and pretty soon, mm-hmm. you know, because when this starts like getting really close to around the corner, like right now, institutional investors are kind of starting to see it around the corner, it's getting close. But when, like, you know, small business startups put capital to work by buying like fleets of Teslas getting ready for this, meaning like it's like ready to go. That's going to be interesting, because then we'll see like wait time for new Model 3s or Model Ys go up. And that's going to be a whole nother signal to pay attention to, I think.
That's a great call out. I'm going to be looking for used car prices for Teslas started to shoot up. For hardware,
yeah,
3
plus. Used car prices with hardware 4 specifically, probably, because hardware 3 will,
yeah,
get
hardware
less
4 to start. Yeah, for sure. I know Elon and Tesla have said that hardware 3 cars will start getting there. Like, they'll get free upgrades at some point if they can't do unsupervised driving on the hardware. The way I read that is like, that you're not going to solve unsupervised on hardware 3. You're going to need to do an upgrade. I think their rhetoric has been kind of dodgy for a long time around hardware 3. And I think
or
when
it's always going to be like 1.9 less safe, you know, and they're just like, why would we not upgrade every hardware 3 to hardware 4? It's just to have enough compute to do the extra 9 of safety, you know?
Yeah. And it could also be like, hey, like if we tell their people that their hardware 3 will be solved, then they're not going to go out and buy a hardware 4 or plus, right? Because, you know, they want to keep that manufacturing line cranking. So, you know, I think them promising a free upgrade is big, but to start, definitely hardware 4. You, and again, I'm not, you know, and we're not saying this is definitely going to happen. It's going to be something we're going to look for if it indeed is happening, right? If that is happening, that's probably a sign that says the market is starting to price in an unsupervised self-driving car at scale, right? That's going to be a big tip off.
Yeah, I feel like we sort of got a little bit of like a fake out of this a few years ago when Hertz made the deal to buy those Teslas. Yeah. They bought all the Model 3s, unfortunately. They're a little too early. If they were just doing it right now, it would probably be much better timing for them, you know?
Yeah. I would still make a case for them that if they just did a little bit of better job executing this than that strategy, they would have been positioned really well. It's just, It's a legacy company trying to, like, this is why legacy companies typically have a really tough time in paradigm shifts, because they don't understand the paradigm shift fully. Mm. You know, they're not really positioning themselves to, like, you know, buying a Model 3 in 2020, 2021, a fleet of whatever many hundreds of thousands of Model 3s, that in the long, that also means you need to position yourself so that in the event FSD doesn't come to fruition, you can still survive. You know, you can still accumulate those units and survive the transition, right? That's one of the things that I would do anyway if I was there. So, how do you view how do you view the bot development versus the self-driving development? Because one of the things that I keep thinking through is the regulation required to operate a self-driving car seems like it's going to be significantly more difficult to navigate through, at least in its current form, than a human or robot, especially in a business-to-business setting. You have to deal with NHTSA, you have to deal with a bunch of other regulations and agencies to try to get a car to market, number one, and then have it drive itself, number two. Whereas a human or robot, really the only things you have to worry about are OSHA in the workplace, right? And you can mitigate those very easily by just separating the workflows and not having humans as part of the workflow with a human or robot, just treat it as manufacturing equipment of sorts. And so what that enables is that you can start flooding the market with human or robots without really having to worry too much about getting all these crazy regulatory approvals. And so what that could mean is that this thing comes to market a lot faster than we think, especially if they're teleoperated, because you can sort of use a human to step in when it gets confused and just allow them to run autonomously outside of that. And you get sort of this leverage on human labor. Instead of doing five people doing five tasks, you can put five human or robots and one person oversees the five, right? And so the as long as that human or robot doesn't cost $1 million or whatever, the business case becomes very, very obvious. So how do you view like those two things, and how do you think the market is viewing those two?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially before we knew the results of the election and that, Trump and Elon's kind of alliance and such, I viewed, worst case scenario, the humanoid would start being produced and delivered before full self-driving like is approved and allowed mass, in the next 2 to 3 years, you'd have some humanoids start popping up, and full self-driving might be another couple of years until it's sort of officially allowed to launch wide scale, for example. But now with the, regulations, I think being more friendly and more rational, I think you'll see full self-driving very quickly this 2025, and the humanoids still are like 2 to 4 years out before they start. That's my guess. Like the hand is just being worked out. That was a while. And there's probably a lot of other things they want to like change and before they get their final version down that they want to start mass producing. They might start doing some pilots in the next year or two at some PepsiCo or somewhere like that, possibly. But I think like you'll see it more massively in 2 to 4 years get deployed. So I was surprised that you mentioned that you think the humanoids will be teleoperated. I never thought of that. Possible. Yeah. I know like the cars, the robotaxis, they're talking about maybe the first city or a couple cities having the capability to teleoperate them if they get stuck or something bad happens. I could see that as a very short term thing, but I don't know. That feels like it goes against the grain of what Elon wants to do. I feel like, and so I'm not sure, but the humanoid robots, I've never thought about them being teleoperated possibly, and maybe in the very beginning, in the pilot phases or something. Cause I know they're, teleoperated somewhat at like, We Robot Day and such, for showing it off there. Yeah. I never thought about that, as a possibility. If they get stuck in something, I imagine there's some command you could do just to like default it back to like some original state to like reboot it, to like, all right, go back to your stance and go to your home or something, or walk to its home in its normal stance so you can restart the process you want it to do again, or just avoid that process until you retrain it the right way or something. But I'm not sure how, that's just my guess.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
what do you think?
Just to walk you through the teleoperation sort of logic is like, I mean, if you think about full self-driving, FSD development, the entire owner fleet was a teleoperator for the self-driving software for the last 6 years or however it's been 4 years, right?
That's
the,
true.
The teleoperator is the feedback loop that gives the Tesla team the data that they use to correct the mistakes. And so the way I think about the bot is like, okay, so even if you're getting a sort of this function where you have two bots per one human and you manufacture at a level that, saves labor costs for that task by at least 10%, a business is going to be incentivized to invest in that human or robot so that they can lower their costs. And so that human that oversees that bot, right? Anytime the bot does something wrong, my dog disagrees. I don't know if you can hear him barking downstairs. the long folks are here. Shout out Jose. So anytime the person it goes in to fix the mistake, that is a it's no different than an intervention in a self-driving vehicle. That data gets collected, it gets sent to the mothership. Tesla, you know, reruns their models and whatever with those interventions, and then you keep updating the software through that, right? It's like, hey, you didn't pick up this object right. You didn't recognize that this was a cup. Whatever it could be. And then that generates the flywheel. And the more, and so by doing that, in the same way as the cars, Tesla is creating an incentive structure for itself to just dump as many human or robots on the market as quickly as possible so that it can start collecting that intervention data from the teleoperators that then they'll use to upgrade the model. And then what ends up happening is that as it gets better, you have this function of your leverage increases, right? Instead of going to 2-to-1, you go to 5-to-1 and you go to 10-to-1 because the bots become more and more reliable, more and more autonomous. And you still keep that one person intervening with those, you know, to the point where maybe the end goal is to be at 100 bots to one person overseeing a fleet of 100 bots by the year 2030 or whatever it could be. And so I think that's what gets me so excited about the bot prospect in the near term, because there is a business use case for a bot as long as it can do those tasks in those different arenas, right? What do you think about that?
That's interesting. Yeah, I have to wrap my head around that, the teleoperated bots, because, you know, that model makes sense. And it, when you compare it to sort of what's been going on with the full self-driving and the Tesla, we're sort of the operators, you know, making the adjustments real time. And so the bot, you know, is there someone kind of ready to, you know, with a VR headset on that can switch to any bot that calls for it to help or something? Is that kind of what you're imagining? Right. To like suddenly exactly. Jump into that bot perspective and be like, okay, this is what we do here. Then move the bot around and then turn it off.
Yep.
So the bot can continue from there.
Bot 3 needs help. You beam in. And then just like they were teleoperating the bots at the Wii Robot event, you know, and it comes up with a UI that says, you know, do corrective behavior. You do the corrective behavior, you send the control back to the bot, that data gets shot back. And then, you know, it's just a teleoperator just kind of waiting for those errors to come through. And then you track those errors over time, you know, and if you can get it to be like, okay, now we can add another bot and that person has enough bandwidth to take on the potential, or we throw it to a new task, right?
Yeah.
That maybe
it's now, what do you think about this? That could be a good solution, but what do you think about that only, like, even initially after the, you know, after initial pilot phase with PepsiCo or whatever for the first year and Tesla's own factory, then when like it starts getting broadened out to consumers and so forth, what if do you think that there would just maybe need to be like one per 1,000 humanoids, you know, because it'll be so infrequent because of all the thing. Hear me out for a second. Like all the data from all the AI created video, real world stuff being done with NVIDIA and like Sora and OpenAI, like they can create like infinite real world videos to train the bot on, almost, where it's not going to be like perfect, but it'll be like infinitely more data than like the fake training data they have to solve full self-driving on for previous years that wasn't enough, right?
Very interesting. Yeah. Like why couldn't they do that? Couldn't they do that? It's almost like they'd be leveraging like their in-house, like XAI's video generating solution that competes with Sora and Google's, like the thing that they just showed a couple of days ago that was insane, like way ahead of Sora already. By the way, OpenAI is cooked. We can talk about that.
Imagine like 2 years from now, how much more advanced it'll even be, right? And then all the data feeds to the humanoids. So maybe instead of 1 in 10, you only need like 1 in 1,000. You know, it'll be much more rare where a human has to come in that no AI has ever generated for it to train off of. You know, some weird situation.
That is such a good point. That I love that. Yeah, who knows? So I think. But okay, so what is the thread that we're pulling on here? The human or robot is insane.
Yeah,
like the market for this thing is insane.
Yeah,
teleoperated or not, it's insane.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I know.
You know,
it's gonna be like I definitely want like several of them for myself at least. I don't want one. Yeah. I want like a dozen of them or something. I want to be able to like, you know, load them on my Cybertruck and like go somewhere and build a cabin in the woods or something. like real world Minecraft in the woods with the bots, you know?
Hell yeah. I asked my wife if she would want to get one. She's like, of course I would want to get one. Like, who wouldn't want one? It's going to help me like clean up the house while I care for our children. It's going to help me like do the dishes and do laundry. Right. So the question becomes, and I think this is what's so interesting about Tesla. The question becomes, can they execute this from a technical perspective? Right. Like it, because it sounds so crazy, but what's insane to think through is that Tesla is going to do this with cars. Like, it's become very obvious that they're going to do this with cars with just vision and an inference compute using neural end-to-end neural nets, when literally almost everyone was saying, this is crazy. You need LiDAR, you need LADAR, you need all these things. This is pie in the sky, crazy thinking. You're scamming your customers, blah, 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 right? And then lo and behold, we get V12 and all these problems get fixed with one broad stroke because they removed the heuristics and they went with the end-to-end. And you're like, oh. And then they went to V13 and everyone who's got V13 is like, this is by easily the best thing ever. Why isn't it wide? It's absolutely amazing. Not perfect, but the path is very, very obvious where they're going. And so now it's the technical expertise they have, and it's underpinned, again, the bot's going to be underpinned by the same exact technology. It's a different problem, but it's underpinned by this thought process of use cameras to collect the data and to see what you're going to do, use the inference computer in the bot to execute the tasks, and then throw all that data to the AI brain in the headquarters to train, and then just upload the AI code anytime you get better. Boom, like the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy. So of course it's going to happen. Of course it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time.
Do you think the bots will be like completely waterproof, like be able to walk into the water and, you know, I don't know. That's a weird question. They should be able to go underwater, and there should be a version that it can like do stuff underwater if need be, I would think too.
Yeah. I think the bigger challenge would probably be like the pressure, like making sure that the bot doesn't collapse on. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we can get our watches down how many feet underwater to make those like submariner watches. You can take, I don't know, how many thousands of feet.
I mean, definitely for SpaceX's plans to colonize Mars, a major puzzle piece. You know, it's exciting to see that work out, right?
Yeah. And like, what are the markets that are open by companies being able to, I don't know, like, is it, or not even companies, like just like maybe governments start buying these things to keep their countries flawless and beautiful, like just have, you know, or HOAs, like Hans has brought up this point before, like why shouldn't HOAs buy bots to just roam the neighborhood, pick up trash? You know, we have in our neighborhood, there's always some guy that leaves their dog poop on the yard of someone's yard, and my yard sometimes, and I'm like, why aren't you picking up after your dog? Just have, you know, the bots patrol and whatever, do lawn work at a fraction of the cost of your typical lawn mowing. I mean, it's the markets are endless. It's just a technical challenge. Can Tesla do that? Can it become a general purpose robot? And, you know, I think the question of why couldn't they do that is like the actual question now that they have the underpinning technology of solving for the real world using artificial intelligence.
That's a profound question is why can't they do it? That's what people should be asking. That's what any investor who's skeptical. That's a great question to ask. Why wouldn't Tesla be able to do it and have them answer it? Because there's no good answer to that question.
Right. Especially if you're somebody who doubts their progress. Why couldn't they do it? Let me ask you one more question before I let you go, Emmett. So the media landscape feels very different now versus where we've been, I think, tracking this story. You know, I feel like since 2014 through like 4 or 5 weeks ago, whenever the election has been, the media landscape has felt most of the time anti-Tesla, anti-Elon, you know, very much feeding negative headlines instead of trying to at least be neutral. Whereas now, and I think a big part of it is because of X and its ability to recenter the conversation around the facts and truth. It's not perfect, far from it, but it does a hell of a lot better job than legacy media. One of the things I'm thinking through is I do wonder if the FUD landscape for the next 4 years at least is going to be significantly subdued, which is going to help the story gain momentum in a way that it wasn't able to before, from both a stock perspective, but also from a adoption of the technology perspective. How, like, do you think that's a material thing? Do you think that's like, you know, hopium because, you know, we're here now and it feels a little bit more free and a little bit more light? Could that change? How do you think about that?
You know, I'm so scarred from the last 14 years of legacy media coverage on Tesla. I'm so scarred that I can never forgive legacy media, nor will I ever trust it, you know? And so I'm not the right person to ask that. I have no hope that legacy media is worth any trust by anyone. Everything the legacy media says with the word Tesla in it should be not trusted and should be, you know, researched on your own, because they've been wrong so many things, not just Tesla, but Trump, you know. You know, it's just, there's so many things, and those are two things. There's probably so many other things they're just so biased on. And you just, I think X is the best place for information. You can look at both sides of things and make up your own mind. Just try to have an open mind as you read different perspectives, because we've just been, you know, as we grew up as kids, for some reason, we're told to trust the news, you know? And so we just grow up in that mindset and you start trusting the news. That's how you grew up. And then you find out later that everything it's been telling you is wrong. So you just have to unlearn trusting the news. And now you have to figure it out. You have to have the discernment yourself, really.
Okay. I mean, that's great advice. Yeah, I totally understand that. I think the way I view it is, I think the forcing function and the incentive right now for media is to be truthful and to be honest. Otherwise, you will die. Like, you will die. The market now sees what truthful media and how valuable that can be. At the very least, media that's willing to tackle controversial things head on instead of trying to weave a narrative, right? Mm-hmm. I think X is showing a pathway to profitability as a media company to adopt that model. And I think those that wake up to that fact will perform really well in the market, and those that don't will disappear entirely. And so it's just like, it's no different than legacy media, or no different than legacy auto adopting profitable electric vehicles, which they haven't done, and they're totally dead. Like, the writing's on the wall for those guys, right? I think the same thing applies to legacy media. So we'll see.
I hope so. We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. Emmett, any parting words for our dear friends?
Yeah, I mean, Tesla's on a real tear. You know, we're in the midst of this kind of run up. Who knows if we cross $500? Sooner or later, there's going to be, you know, a pullback that's significant. That's going to hurt a little bit, but we've had a really nice run up. I feel like we're all at like some carnival game, watching like a balloon blow up, and you can like stop at any time and stop. But we're still watching the balloon blow up, because we still see it get bigger and bigger. Eventually, it's going to pop, and we're like, ah. So I don't know if it's going to get to $1,000 and pop and go down to $600, or I don't know if it's going to go to $700 and down to $500, or popping right now and go back to $400. But there is going to be that moment that we have to be prepared for mentally. And, you know, it's just something to be prepared for. And if you have a certain amount of Tesla, you know, that you've done really well on, for example, there's no harm in taking like 10% off the table if you just want to make sure and sleep better at night that the balloon's not about to pop and you missed it. You know, it's, you know, some people, I think, make the rash decision like selling everything all at once. And those people, I say, like, think about just selling like a quarter or a half. You don't have to sell all your position, you know, if you're leaning on. So I have friends and family, unfortunately, that have told me after the fact, and I'm like, oh, I wish you just sold half or something, because, you know, that was back at 300 or 350, you know, you could have had the other half still going, you know. And so just, you know, try to think in terms of having two minds and like, hey, you don't have to just be all or none. You know, you can sell a little piece of it, not all of it, if you're nervous, you know?
Yeah. That's why long-term investing is so hard, because it requires a level of patience and a level of pain management and pain tolerance that is rare to emulate anywhere else, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, man. Where can people find you?
Just on Twitter or X, sorry. Just Emmett Peppers on X is fine. Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. That works. You want to tell anyone about your fund?
The fund is doing pretty well this year. I haven't opened it to new investors again for a while. Just trying to make my old investors whole again. We'll see. Hopefully things continue. But, you know, some of the investors have done quite well recently, and some are still, they got in at the highs in 2021 or beginning of 2022. And so we still have some headway to make back for them. So I think we'll get there, hopefully, knock on wood. But Yeah, fund's going well. Matt, you know, Matt, he used to work with me, and then we, you know, it wasn't doing well. So we had to like downsize and like go in survival mode, but I'm glad we did and kept costs low, because it's now it's roaring back, and we'll see what happens with the fund. But yeah, maybe my fund's YouTube channel will get set up again in 2025, because we have to give some of our fees out to charity. My fund's prospectus, half the fees net of expenses goes to charity. So the way we do it is through we were doing it through our YouTube channel. We'd interview people, try to open source research on things we're interested in, whether it's like space industry or battery chemistry or whatever. And at the end of the interview, we'd ask the interviewee, you know, what charity they picked for us to donate to. And that's kind of how we open source donating our fees, the half of our fees as well. So I might start that model back up in 2025 for the channel. I'll let you know if I do.
Awesome. Please do. All right, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Farley.
All right. Hang around here for a second, if you don't mind.